Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOMTV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. This is the first podcast of the new year, 2020. Thank you all so much for joining. This is we have quite a bit coming. This year is going to be a big whirlwind for me. Well, first big bit of news is for 5.5 years, I've been directing a film called The Delicacy. It is a film that is about a group of sea urchin divers and a lot more off the coast of California. We filmed in some of the great restaurants and underwater, above water, all on film. So not on video. It's been the first documentary in a long time that's done anything like this, and it is finally done. It will premiere at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival on the 24th of January, Friday night, and you can bet I will be having a drink. Anyways, if you're into food stuff and you SOMTV subscribers are in luck in the future, you're going to like this film a lot, or at least find it fascinating, because it is, I've never seen anything like it. I hope that's a good thing. We'll have events and all sorts of screening news coming up, and that will be found on all of our social media, and if you're an email list subscriber, you'll get that information. Also, we have another SOM movie coming. That will be out in 2020. Release dates and title will be named quite soon. So we have been frantically traveling all over the world to get this thing done in time, and we still have a couple more international trips to go. But as we go, I've been talking to people who are joining the cast for various topics, and I was just in Sonoma filming with a man by the name of Steve Mathiasen. Steve Mathiasen has been in two of the SOM movies. He was in part two. If you recall, he dealt with the earthquake. And so we're going to talk about that and kind of where he's at and what happened, the fallout, the aftermath. And he was in SOM 3 sitting at the table with Steven Spurrier and Dalynn Proctor and Madeleine Paquette drinking that old Clos de Vaux wine from The Judgment of Paris. Steve is just a wonderful guy. I can't say enough about him. But he told me this story a long time ago about how he was attacked by an owl just before he got into his winemaking days, and he almost died from it. And it's just something I haven't been able to let go of. So him and I will discuss that. If you know winemakers, you know, most of you, if you're in the business, you've seen winemakers do their real job. You know, they're standing in mud, they're covered in dirt, they're dealing with test tubes, they are trying to measure the sugar in grapes. But if you're not kind of entrenched in this world, you often see them at events and they're dressed nice. But most of their time is spent out in, you know, the vineyards. They're farmers. And so, you know, it's not that crazy to think one of them could have, you know, a lot of run-ins with wildlife and nature. But I guess if you're just a casual wine drinker, you forget that, you know, grapes are a plant and plants grow outside, and outside has animals. And so without further ado, let's talk to Steve Mathiasen.
I'm here at Mathiasen Winery with Steve Mathiasen, one of my favorite people in the wine business. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, but we just filmed a scene for SOM 4. I don't even know. This might be the first time anybody hears that we're making another SOM movie. And, you know, this one I think might be good. I think this one's going to be very interesting. I'm very excited about it. I can't talk about it, but we'll talk more about the fourth SOM movie, which comes out the end of this summer. So we'll talk more about that later. But Steve, if you don't remember Steve Mathiasen, he had his house beat up in the earthquake in Napa, right? What else? You were in SOM Into the Bottle.
In SOM Into the Bottle. I think the first time we did something together was when you were doing a piece on the geology of Napa Valley.
That's right.
For Guild SOM.
That's correct, yeah. That was years ago. That was before SOM 1 came out.
Yeah, probably 6 or 7 years ago, something like that.
I mean, you're a very accomplished winemaker. Your existence is not predicated by being in some goofy wine documentary. I just mean, for the point of reference, is a few things we need to talk about. One, we'll talk about the earthquake. We'll talk about verticals, because you were in an episode on SOM TV. And there's a story you told me about how you were almost killed by an owl that I just can't stop thinking about, and you have to tell this story, because it's the most amazing thing in the world. It's really the only reason I want to talk to you right now, but we'll get this wine stuff out of the way. All right, so what's the update on the earthquake? What happened out of that? Because in the film, it basically happens to you and we move on. There's no update.
Yeah, I mean, because you were there, you called me the day of the earthquake and came up the day after the earthquake. So we were like moving the stuff out of the house so that we could lift the house up before it fell over while we were doing that interview. Jill was mad at me because, you know, she was like, what the hell's wrong with you? We need to get everything out of the house.
And now and you're outside.
Over there like,
You're outside giving an interview.
Yeah.
I remember like calling and asking you if we could film this interview, and there was like this, like, you had this shakiness in your voice of like, you didn't even hear what I asked. You know, you just sort of were like, sure.
Okay. Yeah, let's do this.
I can tell. And when we came up, the thing that made me realize that you are going to be a winemaker forever, like you can't, there's nothing else you can do, is that you had tears in your eyes. You're talking about the barrels that are destroyed, your fear for the safety of people you work with and your family, and your house is wrecked. And then we got through that subject, and I asked you a question about winemaking, and it was totally off topic. It was just about winemaking. And you dried the tears in your eyes, and you just started talking about winemaking like with a passion that was so extraordinary. And that's how I knew this guy couldn't do anything else. I mean, it was like in a moment of tragedy, you can turn that off and then talk about what grapes you're growing, how much you love it, how, you know, it's a very interesting thing. So what happened after the earthquake? Your house fall down?
No, we were really lucky in so many different ways. And so Jill's cousin is a contractor who does restaurants.
Jill's your wife.
Yeah, our wife, Jill. So restaurants are you move, right? When they lease a space, and you got to do all the work, and hopefully within a month so that place can open. Mm-hmm. Totally different than a residential contractor. So he dropped, and luckily he had two restaurant jobs pending that both were good wine accounts of ours. So he's like, look, I got to get my cousin Jill and her husband Steve back in their house. And so they were able to put off those restaurants were like, yeah, get the Mathiasens back in their house. So we was able to put that off, showed up, and we got the house lifted, new foundation. Meryl to take advantage of it, put our kitchen downstairs so the kitchen opens up in the backyard, new walls, everything, windows, all of that shit in a month, believe it or not.
Wow.
And so now we have a vastly improved house. We're still paying it off, but we have a vastly improved house.
Yeah, of course. I think most people are still paying their houses off, though, so it's par for the course.
Yeah, exactly.
How old's your house?
1904.
So did you have problems with it being like a historic house or anything?
No, thank God. It wasn't actually, the county didn't even really know what was there. So we had a lot, so since so much got destroyed before, we kind of had, it was another way we got lucky is that we had, it was such a funky old house that didn't really have any records, and so we were able to just put it back together the way we wanted to and turn it into like the house we always wanted. So we love it now.
Yeah, it's great. Well, we filmed in it for the Verticals episode. Yeah. Anybody who subscribes to SOMTV, there's a series called Verticals, which is like, I think it came, that whole series, Verticals, came out of Into the Bottle, where you could kind of open up different bottles as chapters, but it takes place at one winery. And I think the impetus for the show came from wanting to do it about you. I mean, we really, Jackson, myself, Christina, everybody who made the films, was like, we would really like to investigate. I don't know if people know this, but you're kind of like you don't really fit the normal like Napa or even winemaker thing. You're kind of like a punk, you know, skateboarder.
Still am, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
skate anymore, too many surgeries.
Yeah,
but it's still punk.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate to hear you sold out. You can't skate anymore. That breaks my heart.
I can still snowboard.
Okay, good. I'm just kidding.
It's snow softer.
It's people who know you know that this is it's just not the typical situation, which is why every time I have a chance to film something, I keep coming back. But we filmed the Verticals in your new house, and it is.
Well, all that footage in Psalm 2 Into the Bottle, you can see all the destruction of the house, and then and on the Verticals, you can see it put back together again. That actually is pretty cool to see that documentation.
The reason I just wanted to talk about this, I've had a lot of people ask, like, what happened to Steve? You know, what happened to him? And I realized we never really did.
Yeah, it just made harvest, you know, that just became one of the harvests from hell, basically, because it freaking happened during harvest. And the earthquake was right at the very beginning, right when we were getting started on Rosé. And so we were rebuilding the house. So Jill's cousin, when he dropped everything, came in there, it was like, we're going to rebuild your house, kind of, because the idea was budget. And so I was working with him on it every single day,
right,
as was Jack, who has been with us now for 10 years, like a brother. And so
at that point, though, you had no winery.
We had no winery. So we were in the custom crust. So every morning I'd get up at 5 a.m., Josh would be here. We'd plan out what we're going to do for the day, work in the house. And then I'd go to the vineyards, go to the winery, do harvest, come back, work in the house again. So it was just, you know, it was just one of those harvests, basically, where it's like, well, this is rebuild our house and do harvest.
I mean, does it make you a better winemaker to have gone through that, or does it like you didn't need to?
But I think that being like going through anything during harvest makes you a better winemaker because like there's, you know, you always say you know someone better when you've seen them drunk, basically. You know, it's the same thing. You know someone better when you met them during harvest. Because harvest is a lot of stress and pressure, and so people's personality can come out, basically. And so having practice being under the pressure of harvest, it's like when they do like Army Ranger training or something like that, and they put you under right. pressure so you can practice being under pressure so you can perform under pressure. For sure, that's part of harvest.
I wonder, it's probably better to see people drunk during harvest to really get to know them. That's probably the best way.
Yeah, normally, if you're getting with harvest, you wait until the end to get drunk. You drink a lot of beer during harvest, but you can't be hungover the next day. You got to pick grapes.
Yeah.
So at the end of harvest is when you get drunk, get sick, get the flu, moan and in bed for a week, and then you're back at it.
sounds awesome.
The post-harvest cold. Yeah. Everyone always, you know, they call it the post-harvest blues. You're not elated at the end of harvest. You're spent.
Yeah.
And so what I've learned along, I used to look forward to like the elation of harvest and then be disappointed that it didn't happen. Now I look forward to just hiding and recovering. And it's just a very purging time.
You're just like sobbing naked in the corner of the
sobbing. And so it's like, well, all those great things you were going to do, it's basically, let's just forget about all that. I'm just going to be sobbing naked.
Yeah.
And a week or two of that and you get out of your system.
So wait, what's the best part of a year in a winemaker? Because that's, you would think it'd be, you know, harvest is that the birth? No. Is that the conception?
Well, if you're working in the vineyards, it's the whole year, right? So you start the year with pruning, and then as the spring goes on, you watch you're pruning to the vineyard. You're trying to like think about how the vines were, how they do last year, so you can prune them so that they're going to be in balance, because you're looking for balanced vines, really for wine. And then the spring comes, you're watching the weather, you're watching the rain. Do I mow the cover crop or leave it? Do we need to?
Which part do you enjoy most? What do you enjoy the most?
The whole thing of it, because it's a rhythm of it. It's a yearly rhythm. So what I enjoy the most is the rhythm. So being part of the rhythm. And so for each of these phases, you only prune once a year. So you look forward to pruning, but then it's a lot of work. So you look forward to starting pruning, then you look forward to finishing pruning. When you got your last block pruned, you have a great feeling of accomplishment. And then you do weed control under the vines with cultivation, and that's a big push, and it's like, oh my God, you know, the weeds are growing so fast, we don't have enough tractors, and then you get over that, and you get over shoot thing, you know, and
it sounds like you're describing like a barbarian invasion here. You're not really describing, it's just like you're all barely at bay the whole time.
The entire year, yeah. And so then
do you have a point where you're like, this is the elation of winemaking?
Well, the elation is that you're constantly trying to overcome the current insurmountable obstacle. But you manage to overcome it, and it's this great feeling, and then you tackle the next one. So you're just tackling the next. Mother Nature's throwing shit at you. Your right-hand person breaks his hand, and all of a sudden, now what am I going to do? You know, like, you're just, the earthquake was just like another, okay, what are we going to, how are we going to get through this one? And then you get through it, and then it's on to the next thing. And now that we're getting into the holidays, is like the one time of the year. Like I do not understand people getting depressed during the holidays, because it's the one time of the year where we have nothing to do. Like there's like a 3-week period in here where we don't have all the fourth quarter wine sales are done, all of our harvest is done, all the wine's settled in barrel. We're not ready to prune yet. Most of our employees are back down visiting their families in Mexico, and we're just kind of chilling. And that's a nice feeling, but you know, how much of that can you handle before you get bored? So
it's like you're like on leave from Vietnam and you just want to get back in the shit kind of thing?
You're like, you kind of like the leave, but after a while you kind of miss the shit, yeah.
Okay, so all right, when you and I, we were filming, what were we filming? Jackson and I were filming with you for something you told. Is it true that you almost died from an owl? Please tell. I want to hear the story now.
Almost blinded.
Okay, tell me. Let's talk about owls for a minute. Let's talk about owls because after this story, I've looked at them completely differently. But let's just have a conversation about owls. These beautiful, cute.
Well, the ones that you have to look at a little differently are the great horned owls, which I did not know that was a factor.
Describe to me a great horned owl.
The great horned owl are the big, tall ones that have the two horns that look like cat ears, the feathers that come up.
They're pretty big birds.
They're large birds. Like if you were to see it here, it would probably be sitting about a couple, two and a half feet tall standing here with big, thick legs, basically.
Okay, talons, big.
And so they have really thick legs. And so I was renting a room down in Merced. And when I was working down there, when I was getting started in agriculture, and another person renting a room down there was an ornithologist who was doing his PhD on wood ducks, because farmers put up wood duck boxes. So he was like the bird resource. So after I had this encounter, I learned a lot about, he told me a lot about owls. And one of the things I learned is that their bones, instead of being hollow on their legs, are solid, because they hit so hard that they try to break the spine of the animal that they hit. So they come in and just lock their legs and just slam into them at the top base of their head and try to break their neck.
So like if they're going after a rabbit, they're not trying to puncture, they're trying to smash.
They're trying to just break its spine right then and there, and then they can lift it up when it's limp. Versus like a hawk has hollow legs, they go down and pluck it up out of the air and either peck it to death or drop it, basically. You know, so the owl is trying to kill on impact with impact.
Right. Okay, so walk me through, take me moment by moment. I'm like, what happened with you in this great
horned owl? At that time, I'm working in vineyards, peach orchards, and walnut orchards, and almonds. With a company, we're trying to like work on sustainable ag, get people to plant cover crops. We're given the technical support that they want to go organic or reduce their pesticide use, right? So that was my job. And so I would walk around and check for the good bugs, check for the bad bugs, and report that to the farmer, right? And so these walnut trees can get really big. And this is a particularly tall, cavernous walnut orchard. And at that point, our oldest son, who's 22, was like 2 years old, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So old enough that if you gave him a feather, he'd think that was pretty cool. So so basically I'm walking through the walnut orchard, and I see this pile of really cool feathers. I'm like, oh, that's rad. There's like really big, beautiful, long feathers. So I was bending over, and I hear this racket of birds up in the tree. I didn't think anything of it. And I'm bending down, looking at the feathers, and then slam, I just get nailed with incredible force in the back of my head. And it totally just knocks me off my feet, drives me onto my hands and knees, and I'm on the ground.
Like somebody punched you in the back of the head?
It's like I got hauled off and just punched by someone big right in the back of the head. And I'm on my hands and knees, and the back of my head is just hurts like hell. Oh, my God. And I'm like, what the fuck? Did I just get shot? But, you know, what is going on? And then I see over by upper peripheral vision, I see these giant wings extend over my head, and the frickin' giant owl is on the back. It was digging its talons into the back of my head as I'm on my hands and knees, and it takes off of my head. And this is...
It's trying to take you up? It's trying to lift you?
No, it was just trying to inflict damage onto the back of my head after it had already hit me and knocked me down. Because they fly silently. They have fringes on the ends of their wings. You can't hear them fly. So it got me from behind and took off my head. So that's when I just got up and just ran for it. And I was like totally... evasive action, like darting back and forth, running as fast as I can out of this orchard because I can't see because it's circled around and it's trying to come from behind.
And so it was still pursuing you.
It was still pursuing me. I had blood coming down the back of my neck. I get back in my car. My neck was sore for like a week after that. And that's when I'm talking to the guy who is with the wood duck study, and he's like, you're lucky you have your eyes because they'll try to poke the eyes out.
I mean, so you told me the story, and I went down a wormhole, and I found out several people have died, like legitimately died from great horned owls. Like people who are out in the woods hunting or doing something, and they get attacked, and they don't have a way to get to safety, and they end up bleeding to death. There's some crazy...
Yeah, because they always get you from behind. He said that if you don't want to get attacked by a great horned owl, buy a couple of googly eyes and stick them to the back of your hat. So then, because then they won't attack head on.
So, So have you learned from this? Do you ever wear googly eyes in the back of your head?
It took years for me to not like peek over my shoulder when I was walking through tall forests, for sure.
Why did he attack you? Was that...
Because that was guarding its nest. So it was right underneath its nest. Those are its feathers on the ground.
Man,
so
oh man.
So mating season.
Did you ever go back and get your revenge on this bird? I feel like this is a movie.
No, you know what? It's like I'm still a big fan, but it's like the coyotes. I like to have them be at a distance, but I like the fact that they exist, because it's nature and
right.
So I'm still a big fan, but I prefer them to stay their distance.
So if I were to write a script that's about you getting your revenge on a great horned owl, and it's like a Western or something, are you in? Can we do this?
Maybe the revenge. Maybe we change it from a revenge to a to capture and relocate.
Well, I mean, Westerns that end in capture and relocate aren't very. It's not very profitable, Steve.
Yeah.
All right. So okay. Wait. The last thing I want to say is legitimately think your wines are amazing. I want to tell. How do people get your wines? What do you make? Let's talk just for a couple minutes.
Okay.
What you make, why you make it, because you make some wacky essence.
We make some wacky wines. Our biggest production is Chardonnay, but our Chardonnay is restrained. It has acidity. It's bright, clean, and so it's almost like a weird variety in the sense that it's. I think of it as a very traditional, true expression of Chardonnay, but it's not what you normally see
in Napa, especially. Yeah.
Yeah, and so. But, same thing with our Cabernet. And probably to plumb back to, like, an older style of Cabernet that was made for, having some structure and...
Low alcohol.
And acid and lower alcohol. And
like really 70s kind of thing?
Like 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it's just the joy of growing stuff. And so that's where the Refosco, the Ribolla Gialla, Cabernet Franc...
Let's say the Refosco or the Ribolla Gialla. Are these grapes that you, do you actually go out and you go, I see this site, I think this Italian varietal could grow here really well, or do you just go, fuck it, I'm just going to plant this and see?
The second thing.
Yeah, so you just go, I like this, I had it in Italy, I want to try it here?
Yeah, basically. Because we can grow just about anything in Napa. It's a really mild, easy climate. It's not going to taste like what it tastes like in Italy, which is fine. Because our varieties taste like where they're from. And I think that if you fall on your face when you're trying to replicate, like let's say you love Barolo and so you're going to grow Nebbiolo, try to do Barolo here in California, it's not going to happen.
Right.
It's not Barolo. You can make a delicious Nebbiolo, but you're not going to make a delicious Nebbiolo if you're trying to replicate Barolo.
Right.
Because you're going to fall flat. You need to, what is it here? And that doesn't mean that it has to be big and overblown. It can be, our wines tend to be very restrained, but they still have fruit. They still have, you can tell they're grown here in California.
Well, I just bought a couple of bottles, a Magnum and three bottles to bring back for Christmas. So I don't know when this podcast airs, but it's Christmas time. Yeah. Where can people buy your wines?
Your local independent wine shop.
Is there what? Do you do direct to consumer?
We do direct to consumer all over the country.
What's that website?
www.matthiasson.com.
M-A-T-T.
M-A-T-T-H-I-A-S-S-O-N.
.com. You probably should have had an easier to spell last name. You could have probably sold a lot more wine.
Yeah, I know. One T and one S would have made it easier.
If you made like killedbyanowl.com, that'd be easier to remember.
Yeah, killedbyanowl.com. Oh, that's death from above.
Death from above. See, you need to make death from above. Yeah. I love this. Okay. Steve, it's a pleasure. I can't wait to see you in the next movie and write another one just so I can put you in it. It's great.
Awesome. Thank you.
Cheers, brother. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for joining. Please, I beg you, can you rate and review this podcast if you love it? Obviously, subscribe to Somm TV. That's SommTV.com, where we are releasing all of our new shows. This week, we will have part two of our Verticals episode on Ridge Vineyards, which sort of picks up where the last one left with more Paul Draper and the next winemaker and sort of the passing of the torch. We get into White Zin. It's pretty funny. And then also, if you want to know more about all of our projects coming up, join our mailing list. That's at sommfilms.com, www.sommfilms.com, because we're going to be sending that
sending out emails for a lot of information, not just the next Saw movie and Delicacy, but also, you know, when posters are available, because we're going to sell those. We're going to sell some t-shirts. You know, any of the things that everybody has been asking us constantly for, they're coming. Our card game, Blinders, is coming back. So the best way to stay up to when that stuff is coming and when we print these things is to join the mailing list. Otherwise, subscribe to social media. We're all out there. Thank you, everybody, from the bottom of our hearts. We'll see you next week when I speak with Brian McClintic about natural wine. I need to define what the hell this is. So we're going to have a conversation from his perspective about what natural wine is and what it means.